Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, April 20th, 2016. The U.S. says all of Machar's conditions were met and he should be in Juba.
The United States was gravely disappointed this week when Dr. Riak chose not to come back. And we urge both parties to make decisions that live up to their commitments under the peace agreement.
The SPLA-IO says they are not to blame for Machar's failure to return to the capital.
Yes, we got the reply from the government side, but still we say that it is not satisfactory for us. We need the government to grant permission for our troops to arrive with all their organic weapons.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. First Vice President-designate Riek Machar's long-awaited return to Juba has been indefinitely postponed. Both the opposition and the government say they are working to resolve the stalemate, while the government says it has granted SPLA-IO Chief of General Staff General Simon Gatwich-Dwal permission to fly over South Sudanese airspace with nearly 200 opposition fighters. The armed opposition insists Juba must allow them to carry their own weapons. Magumi Davis Wakarind reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Bashir Bandi briefed reporters today on the steps the government is taking to enable Machar's safe return to Juba in the coming days.
We are aware as a government the difficulties that this war has brought to us, and we'll want to overcome it sooner than later. So I'm happy to announce that we have accepted as a government that Riak should come with the 195 forces that are accompanying him and accompanying his chief of staff. We have given clearance also for all the planes that are coming, the three planes which are hired.
William Ezekiel, the SPLA-IO spokesman, confirms the government has approved their request to Gatwich to be allowed to fly to Juba aboard the chartered plane.
Yes, we confirm the approval. We have received it from the government, granting permission for the flight of General Simon Gatwich-Dwal, who is staff of SPLM in opposition, to use South Sudan air spaces. They have permitted the arrival of 195 soldiers with only RK-47, without organic weapons.
But Ezekiel insists the government must allow opposition fighters flying into Juba with their chief of staff to carry weapons of their choice ahead of the return of Machar.
This number of 195 soldiers, they should be accompanied by 20 PKM and 20 rocket-propelled grenades. So on our side, yes, we got the reply from the government side, but still we say that it is not satisfactory for us. We need the government to grant permission for our troops to arrive with all their organic weapons. We will not compromise on this. This is our legitimate right. Based on the composition of these 95 soldiers' military requirements.
Band says the government will not yield to the opposition's demands.
We hope for the sake of peace they will accept it, because what is the guns for? Riak coming back home is coming to achieve peace. And after all, the protection of Riak is going to be responsibility of the government that they are forming. This is going to be the government of transitional, the transitional government of unity. So we'll be under one umbrella.
Both Bandi and Ezekiel agree the fighting has caused enough harm for ordinary South Sudanese, but remains unclear as to when Machar will be returned to the capital, which will enable the two sides to form the transitional government. For VOA News, I am Mugume Debs Rwakarinj in Juba.
The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar are blocking implementation of the August peace deal. Catherine Molly Fee says there is a lack of willingness from the leaders of the warring parties to implement the peace agreement. The U.S. top diplomat echoed Washington's disappointment over Machar's refusal to return to Juba. Ambassador Fee tells my colleague John Tanza that Machar's conditions for his return to Juba were met by the international community, so he has no good reason to remain in exile.
I believe President Kiir is unhappy about the situation and would like to see an improvement in the country. I wish his government would do the most that it could to create the conditions for Dr. Riak to return. But as you know, the United States was gravely disappointed this week when Dr. Riak chose not to come back. And we urge both parties to make decisions that live up to their commitments under the peace agreement. You know, John, the Central Bank of South Sudan released statistics this month, and those statistics show that inflation averages 255% here in South Sudan. So let me give you an example of what that means. So if you're going to buy a 50-kilogram bag of maize flour, last year that 50-kilogram bag of maize flour would have cost 500 South Sudanese pounds. Today, it costs 1,200. If you were going to buy a 3.5-kilogram bag of sorghum or malwa, a malwa of sorghum, last year that would have cost 17 pounds. This year it costs 72 pounds. That's just unacceptable. People can't afford those prices. This country needs to stop falling down the hill and needs to begin climbing up the hill.
What are you hearing from Dr. Riak? Is he coming?
My understanding is that Dr. Riak and his team, including General Taban Dengai, are in consultations with the government about the conditions for his return. And again, both sides need to be more flexible. And Dr. Riak needs to recall that the international community met the conditions he asked for in the JMEC group, which is the body set up by the peace agreement to monitor implementation of the agreement. In February, the JMEC, which includes representatives from the government and the opposition, agreed that if his troops and weapons were brought back to Juba, he would return. Those troops and weapons, the numbers agreed, arrived in Juba by April 10th. So there's no reason for him not to come back and form the transitional government.
And the U.S. government has been working closely with the South Sudanese people for many, many, many years. When the conflict broke out in 2013, there was a change in strategy to help the humanitarian conditions, and the U.S. government put a lot of money. What are the prospects for this continued relationship, donor relationship with the people of South Sudan after the formation of the transitional government of national unity, given the lack of cooperation from the two parties?
You're right. Our policy did change after 2013. We do not believe it is appropriate to engage in a government that is not inclusive, that fails to make sure that every community in South Sudan, every ethnic community, every political point of view has a seat in the House. Everybody should have a seat and a voice in the House and should be able to address differences through a political process rather than at the point of a gun. So until those conditions change, we will not be able to have the kind of development partnership we want to have with the government of South Sudan. That is why it is so important for both sides to do everything in their power to ensure that this transitional government is formed so that the peace agreement can be implemented and the critical reforms that need to take place in governance, in security, on the economy, and in reconciliation and accountability. Those steps are needed for South Sudan to stop this death spiral and to move forward in a positive direction. That's what we all want, and that's what we're pushing for.
I hate to sound like a devil's advocate. Do you see any prospect for a peaceful South Sudan?
I believe that the choice is very clear at this moment. It's very black and white. And all leaders should consider very carefully the steps they make, because the decisions that are made by the leaders of South Sudan will affect the decisions that are possible for my government, the U.S. government in Washington, and for other governments. And if they don't make the choice for peace, we will be forced to draw negative conclusions.
And analysts in the region have been saying that the U.S. is using carrots and sticks strategy. Are you going to use sticks?
I would use a different metaphor. I would say we're trying to put our thumb on the scales to encourage both sides to make decisions for peace and decisions for development. Let me go back again to the prices that the ordinary South Sudanese are facing. You know, they're not riding around in air-conditioned SUVs. They are exposed to the criminal violence in this country that's a result of the terrible economic situations. They're the ones going to bed hungry at night. They're the ones who can't afford to send their children to school. These are the conditions we're concerned about, and that is why we continue to press both sides to make the right decisions in favor of the future of this country.
That's Mary Catherine Fee, the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan. She was speaking to South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza at the U.S. Embassy in Juba today. Ambassador Fee's remarks were echoed here in Washington at the U.S. State Department. Spokesman John Kirby told reporters yesterday that Machar's failure to return to Juba is a willful decision that puts the people of South Sudan at risk of further conflict and suffering.
His failure to go to Juba, despite efforts from the international community, places the people of South Sudan at risk of further conflict and suffering and undermines the peace agreement's reform pillars, which are demilitarizing South Sudan, injecting transparency of public finances, and pursuing justice and reconciliation, all of which offer South Sudan a chance for renewal.
Kirby says the U.S. and its partners have gone to great lengths to facilitate Machar's return, including accommodating his request to usher in his advance team and security detail. At the United Nations headquarters in New York, the Security Council called emergency closed-door meetings last night to discuss the way forward. U.S. Deputy Ambassador David Pressman, the alternate representative of the United States to the United Nations for Special Political Affairs, says there is concern over Machar's reluctance to return to Juba, despite his promise to return on Monday and immediately form the transitional government soon after.
We're extremely concerned that Riek Machar has not returned to Juba, as he has publicly stated he would do and as he is committed to do under the agreement. And I look forward to engaging council colleagues to discuss next steps.
Pressman says the UN and multiple member states have undertaken significant political and logistical efforts to facilitate his return, and they expect Machar and all parties to live up to their commitments and to do their part to establish the transitional government. Mariano Mawin, the U.S. representative of the SPLM-IO, says Machar is not refusing to return to Juba, and he says the government statements that his team is carrying heavy artillery is simply not true. He says they invited the government to travel to Gambela to independently verify their weapons.
We suggested to them so they can delegate their representative from Juba to Gambela to verify what we have in Gambela. But unfortunately, actually, the government actually is not willing to do that.
Mawin says the confusion over the types of weapons the SPLM-IO intends to carry is what triggered the refusal from the government to issue flight clearances for officials with the SPLM-IO. The leader of the National Alliance, an umbrella group of South Sudanese opposition parties, is blaming President Kiir for blocking Machar's return. Lamal Cole says the government had earlier refused to grant permission for Machar's chartered plane to land in Juba. Cole tells my colleague John Tanza the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission should pressure President Kiir to stop violating the terms of the peace deal and form the transitional government.
The government violates the agreement at every opportunity. They first did so by creating 28 states. It is doing that now regarding the members of parliament of the political parties. It did also that by appointing the chairman of the National Boundary Commission even before the transitional government of national unity is formed. It is now creating problems for the coming back of Dr. Riek Machar. My own information is that the military group, the JMCC, have agreed on what Riek should bring, but the politicians intervene and cancel that agreement. There is a problem being created to give the impression that Dr. Riek doesn't want to come for some political gain by one side towards implementation of the peace agreement. And unless the pressure is brought to bear on the government, then the likelihood of this agreement being implemented the way it was signed gets more difficult.
And who is to bring this pressure? Because people like you and the other leaders in the country are supposed to have met with President Kiir.
There is a body that has been formed by the agreement to oversee the implementation, and that is JEMEC. So JEMEC must flex his muscle and confront the president and tell him to behave.
And what is happening? Why is Dr. Riek not in town? This is the
start date today. No, he's not in town because he has not gotten clearance from the government. There was difficulty with the Ethiopians. The Ethiopians made the clearance. It is now the government that is still making things difficult. You had the press conference that was conducted by the Minister of Information the other day, full of disinformation and misinformation. They are saying that it's only 40 people that Riek needs to send, when the reality is that there is the IO is still short of 440 soldiers and 1,100 in police. So what is the fuss about? And I'm told that the military have agreed on what kind of weapons should come. Yesterday he's talking about arsenal. Does he understand what an arsenal is? Can it come in a plane? So the government is creating difficulties. And why run to the press conference if it is not meant to score political points? The deputy chairman of IO is here. His chief negotiator is here. Both of them are senior enough to discuss with the government any difficulties that arise. Why rush to the press conference?
Now, with this standoff between the government and the SPLM-IO, what are the other political parties doing to resolve it?
They don't listen to us, of course. They listen only to international community. So we are telling the international community, please help us with these two groups, bring them together, and let the matter be resolved.
You mentioned at the beginning here that four parties are stakeholders in this peace agreement. Mm. And the two parties are not seeing each other eye to eye. Are there any reasons to convince South Sudanese that all is going to be well in the government of national unity, the transitional government of national unity?
Well, we cannot tell the South Sudanese that all is going to go well. But we cannot tell them also that nothing will go well. What we are telling them is that there will be difficulties because the two groups are essentially one. They were one group, you know, that got divided by their struggle over power. It was not a struggle over political issues that they differed on. So the transitional government will be faced with a lot of challenges and a lot of difficulties. This must be understood. But it is not the same as saying that there is no hope of that government proceeding to achieve some of the objectives of the interim period or the transitional period.
That's Lama Cole, leader of the National Alliance of South Sudan Political Parties, speaking to John Tanza in Juba. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A top South Sudanese official speaks out on the recent deadly attack in Gambela, Ethiopia, by South Sudanese gunmen. More on that after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what needs to be done to help youth stay in school?
Basic necessities have to be provided, facilities, books, and then encouragement also is highly needed.
Bringing new innovations in studying. We are living in a technological world. We always hear about the e-learning. For them to be easier, maybe they get some problems in terms of going to school, others maybe live far areas. There should be now like e-learning.
To help me stay in school, I think to keep me engaged, because right now we have the education system is more theoretical. If it was a bit more practical and enterprising and a bit more sustainable, then would have more youth stay in school.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government says it is concerned about the number of children abducted by the South Sudanese armed militias from the Ethiopian region of Gambela late last week. Bashir Bandi, South Sudan's deputy foreign affairs minister, says South Sudan is trying to make that more than 100 children abducted from their villages in Ethiopia are reunited with their families. Mugume Davis-Wakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
Bandi told reporters in Juba today that President Kiir has instructed his security officers to work with their Ethiopian counterparts to rescue the abducted children.
Our president has taken the initiative that he will be talking to his brother, Prime Minister Desalegn, on phone to pay his condolences and to assure him. And also our security sector, and especially the chief of staff, has been directed, and they have been in contact. He had already written to Somora, and the chief of staff of Ethiopia. We are in contact with our embassy. I'm in contact with the Ethiopian embassy here, and we are working very hard to defuse this situation.
Ethiopian officials say more than 200 civilians were killed last Friday when armed men, reportedly from South Sudan's Bibor area, attacked Jakao village in Gambela state. The European Union office in South Sudan condemned the attacks in a statement released today. The EU called on South Sudanese authorities to ensure the immediate return of the abducted children to their families. The EU also called on South Sudanese authorities to bring the abductors to justice. Bandi says the government has stationed its soldiers on the border to stop such raids.
We will not have actually entertain any behaviors, even if it comes from our southern Sudanese. These are people who have been terrorizing our people, cattle raiding everywhere. They have abducted also thousands and thousands of cattle. And our forces are coordinating with the Ethiopian forces at the border.
The European Union said this latest attack is a tragic reminder of the need to achieve lasting peace in the country. And the band says he agrees.
The proliferation of small arms in the hands of the civil population is immense, and if it is not addressed, the security challenges will remain the same, and this is going to be one of the major challenges that will have to be undertaken by the transitional government of national unity.
Bandi declined to say whether or not the South Sudan government has already allowed the Ethiopian troops to cross into South Sudan, saying security matters such as this cannot be discussed in the media. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Juba.
Foreign businessmen in Ye are threatening to shut down their businesses following an attack on Ethiopian and Ugandan nationals by a soldier in uniform and unknown gangs over the weekend. VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Ye.
Ethiopian businessman Abdu Kedir was beaten and injured over the weekend by a soldier. He is conscious and recovering at Yei Medical Clinic. Kedir was hit in the head with an exploded grenade after the soldier fired 3 bullets in the direction where Kedir took cover. Kedir's neighbors rushed over to rescue him. Sutayehu Farensibet is Kedir's brother. He says ongoing insecurity in Yei will force him to abandon his business and return to Ethiopia.
The government don't care about us. We are fearing we can't make a business with this country. Just if you get the way, just maybe we are going to our country, otherwise we'll change the place because we can't do like this one.
Ugandan businessman Kirundi Gerald has been trading in bags and shoes in Yei for the last 2 years. Gerald sustained injuries on his hand on Sunday night when suspected group of gangs attacked him. He describes how he was ambushed by his attackers.
Another one came with a knife. He wanted to put it there in the stomach, but I put the hand like this. When I put for guarding, I passed him. He fell down. When I started to start running, another one came and kicked me again here. I fell down, even the knee. I got some damages. So I tried as well as possible to save my life, and I ran away.
Gerald is calling on other business people operating in Yei to stay indoors at night. Yei acting chairperson of the Chamber of Commerce says it is unacceptable for soldiers in uniform to attack businessmen. Taban Jacob is calling on the Yei River State officials to provide protection to businessmen and women.
And I don't feel good because we have the law enforcing agents like the police. If you're a soldier, it's good enough that you go to the police station, and then you raise your concern so that the rule of law is taken into action. Not reaching to that place, and then you start beating this person unnecessarily. I condemn the act, and I urge the organized law enforcers to put this into consideration, and at least something is done.
Police in Yei detained the soldier who attacked the foreign businessman. A police officer who is not authorized to speak to the media says the police is interrogating the soldier in police custody. This is the first time it has been reported to authorities that foreign businessmen have been assaulted in Yei, but attacks and killings of foreign business people from Kenya and Uganda appears to be a common occurrence in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Yei.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Diane. No one in South Sudan seems to know when Riek Machar will return to Juba. The first vice president designate's long-awaited return has been postponed indefinitely. The government and opposition are squabbling over which weapons can be flown with SPLM-IO troops back to Juba. Earlier, the sticking point seemed to be over whether the government would allow SPLM-IO chartered planes to fly over South Sudan. It has since granted opposition chief of staff the right to fly a plane over South Sudan airspace, along with nearly 200 opposition fighters. The armed opposition, however, insists that Juba must also allow them to carry their own weapons. South Sudan Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Bashir Bandi says they are aware of the difficulties that the war has brought to the people and want to overcome it sooner rather than later. He says Juba has accepted that Machar come with 195 forces and be accompanied by his chief of staff. He says South Sudan has given the clearance also for all three planes that are coming. William Ezekiel, the SPLM-IO spokesman in Juba, confirms the government has approved their request for Gatwich to be allowed to fly to Juba aboard a plane. But Ezekiel insists the government must also allow opposition fighters flying into Juba with their chief of staff to carry weapons of their choice ahead of Machar's return. The United States ambassador to South Sudan says President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar are blocking the implementation of the August peace deal. Mary Catherine Fee says there is a lack of willingness from the leaders of the warring parties to implement the peace agreement. Fee is repeating Washington's stated disappointment at Machar's refusal to return to Juba. Ambassador Fee says Machar's conditions for his return to Juba were met by the international community and that he has no good reason to remain in exile. U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby told reporters yesterday that Machar's failure to return to Juba is a willful decision that puts the people of South Sudan at risk of further conflict and suffering. Kirby says the U.S. and its partners have gone to great lengths to facilitate Machar's return, including accommodating his requests to usher in his advance team and security detail. And finally, the United Nations Security Council held emergency closed-door meetings last evening in New York to discuss the way forward in South Sudan. U.S. Deputy Ambassador David Pressman, the alternate representative of the United States to the UN for Special Political Affairs, says there is concern over Machar's reluctance to return to the South Sudanese capital, despite his promise to return on Monday and immediately form the transitional government soon after. Mariano Mawen, the U.S. representative of the SPLM-IO, says Machar is not refusing to return to Juba. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Feu de l'Amour by J.P. Mpiana.
Est-ce aimer ou être aimé? Bien que l'amour soit le symbole d'un sentiment partagé, être aimé n'est jamais le signe d'un bonheur parfait. Lula Masia, yende kisinanga, Jésus Christ. Bolingo lokola maladie contagieuse, tuna naba mouré déçu, tuna naba veuve d'amour, surtout tuna naba divorcé. Bako pesa yo témoignage.
We've been listening to J.B. Mpiana with the song Feu de l'amour. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. It was good to have you here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Se